Welcome back to Galactic Pulse, where we bring you the latest and juiciest news from across the settled systems. I'm Janessa.
And I'm Paul. Buckle up, folks, because today's story is straight out of a holodrama. We're talking about a scandal involving Enhance, the popular makeover service, and some very illegal activities.
That's right, Paul. It seems that one of the Enhance locations was offering unlicensed makeovers, allowing people to look like celebrities and other unauthorized appearances. This all came to light in the most bizarre way.
You won't believe this, Janessa. A Hope Tech employee actually used Enhance to change his appearance to look exactly like his boss. He then took over his boss's life, complete with access to all the top secret projects and company resources.
Talk about a hostile takeover. This imposter managed to fool everyone for weeks. It wasn't until the boss's wife noticed a strange new tattoo on her imposter husband's lower back that the deception started to unravel.
The fake boss was quickly apprehended and sent to criminal rehabilitation. But this incident has raised serious questions about the oversight and regulation of these makeover services.
Absolutely. Enhance has always been known for its cutting-edge technology, but this scandal shows the dark side of such advancements. The authorities are now investigating how many other illegal makeovers were performed and what other identities might have been stolen.
It's a reminder that while technology can offer incredible opportunities, it also comes with significant risks. Always make sure you're using licensed and reputable services, folks.
Absolutely. Enhance has always been known for its cutting-edge technology, but this scandal shows the dark side of such advancements. The authorities are now investigating how many other illegal makeovers were performed and what other identities might have been stolen. Stay tuned for more updates, and remember, in the vastness of space, always keep your eyes open and your identity secure.
Next up, a teaser from the comeback of the one and only Jerry Starfell, now streaming everywhere.
Have you been to this EIT clothier place in New Atlantis? I mean, you walk in there and it's not a store, it's the inside of a spaceship. The clothes, they're not just clothes, they're like these living, breathing, high-tech entities. You don't pick out a shirt, the shirt picks you out. You try on a jacket and suddenly it's adjusting to your body temperature, changing colors with your mood. I'm like, I just wanted something to cover my torso, not something that knows how I feel before I do. And the pants? Oh, the pants. They've got more pockets than you have items. You're walking around with empty pockets, feeling unaccomplished. What am I supposed to fill these with? Space rock? Then there's the fitting room. It's not a room. It's a portal. You step in, and you're on a catwalk in another galaxy. You come out, and you're not sure if you're still you or some interstellar fashion model. So, EIT Clothier, where the fashion is so advanced, the clothes wear you. You walk in a human, walk out feeling like a cyborg model on a runway. And all I wanted was to buy a belt that doesn't require a degree in astrophysics to put on. I am Jerry Starfeld, and this is me straight from New Atlantis.
This holiday season, treat yourself to holiday chunks. Taste the joy, grab a chunk today.
Next up, we have an exclusive interview with a Ryujin Industries agent who's been at the forefront of uncovering a potential cyber attack by Infinity Limited. Welcome, Agent Nomad.
Thank you, Paul. It's an honor to be here.
Let's get straight to it. Reports have surfaced about a significant cyber attack on Ryujin Industries, possibly orchestrated by Infinity Limited. Can you confirm these reports?
Yes, Paul. Our investigations have revealed evidence suggesting that Infinity Limited might be behind a sophisticated cyber attack aimed at compromising our most sensitive data. While we can't say for certain, the signs point strongly in that direction.
That's quite serious. How did Ryujin Industries uncover this potential cyber attack?
Our cybersecurity team detected unusual activity within our network. Upon further investigation, we discovered that several of our systems had been breached. The attackers used advanced techniques to mask their presence, but we were able to trace the intrusion back to methods commonly associated with Infinity.
In addition to the cyber attack, there were reports of agents from Infinity Limited being uncovered in a recent data leak. Can you tell us more about that?
Certainly. During our investigation, we found evidence of covert operations conducted by Infinity agents within our organization. These agents had infiltrated various departments. The data leak exposed their identities and activities, allowing us to take swift action.
That's quite a revelation. Can you share any specific incidents involving these covert agents?
One particularly intriguing case involved an agent under the direct supervision of our chief of operations, Imogene Salso. This agent, while conducting routine security checks, noticed discrepancies in the access logs of several employees. Digging deeper, they discovered that these employees were using advanced disguise technology to alter their appearances and blend in seamlessly.
It sounds like a scene from a spy thriller. How is Ryujin Industries responding to these threats?
We're taking comprehensive measures to strengthen our cybersecurity and internal security protocols. We've also increased our collaboration with law enforcement and other corporations to address the broader issue of corporate espionage. Our goal is to ensure that such breaches do not happen again.
What about Infinity Limited? Have they responded to these allegations?
So far, Infinity has denied any involvement in the cyber attack and the infiltration. However, the evidence we've gathered is compelling, and we are pursuing legal action to hold them accountable if further investigations confirm their involvement.
This is certainly a developing story. Thank you for joining us, Agent Nomad, and providing these insights.
Thank you, Paul. It's important for the public to be aware of these threats and the steps we're taking to protect our interests.
That was Agent Nomad from Ryujin Industries, shedding light on the recent cyber attack and covert operations possibly involving Infinity Limited. Stay tuned for the latest news.
The feeling that transcends space and time, Chandra Wines. The taste of the universe in every bottle.
Welcome back to Frontier Chronicles, the show that brings you the untold stories from the far reaches of the settled systems.
I'm your host, Jackson Ryder, and today we have a gripping tale from the wilds of Aquila.
Joining us is Jebediah Jeb Carter, a seasoned trapper who has faced one of the most harrowing experiences imaginable. Jeb, thank you for being here.
Well, howdy, Jackson. Reckon it's good to be here, considering all that's happened.
Jeb, your settlement was recently attacked by a large group of Ashta, led by an Alpha. Can you tell us what happened?
It was like nothing I ever seen before. We was just going about our day when out of nowhere, this here massive group of Ashta, about 50 of them came barreling at us. They was coordinated like they had a plan. And leading them was this enormous Alpha Ashta, bigger and meaner than any critter I ever laid eyes on.
That sounds terrifying. How did you and the other settlers respond?
We did what we could, but it was like trying to stop a stampede. We managed to get the families evacuated to Aquila City, but not without losing some good folks. 10 of our own didn't make it. It was a nightmare, plain and simple.
I'm so sorry for your loss, Jeb. Have the Freestar Rangers been able to track down this group of Ashta?
Not yet. They've been searching, but those Ashta are slicker than a greased pig. They know the terrain better than anyone. The Rangers are doing their best, but it's like the Ashta just vanished into thin air.
It's hard to imagine such a large group disappearing like that. What do you think could be behind this unusual behavior?
Honestly, Jackson, I ain't got a clue. Ashta are usually solitary hunters. Seeing them work together like this, especially with an Alpha leading them, it's unheard of. Maybe something's driving them, or maybe they're evolving. Either way, it's a new kind of danger we gotta be ready for.
Yeah. New danger for sure. You better hope they don't return. What do you think the Freestar Collective should do to better protect remote settlements like yours?
I reckon they need to send more Rangers out our way. Maybe set up some permanent outposts. We could use more resources too. Better weapons, more supplies. And it wouldn't hurt to have some experts studying these Ashta, figuring out what makes them tick.
Jeb, thank you for sharing your story and insights with us. We hope the Freestar Rangers can find and neutralize this threat soon. Stay safe out there.
Thanks, Jackson. And thanks to everyone listening. I'll stay safe now.
That was Jeb Carter, a brave trapper from Aquila, sharing his harrowing experience with us. We'll keep you updated on the situation as it develops. Until next time, this is Jackson Ryder signing off from Frontier Chronicles. Stay safe, stay vigilant, and keep exploring the frontier.
You're tuned into the Galactic Pulse, your most trustworthy news source in the galaxy. I'm Paul, and with me is Janessa. How's it going, Janessa?
Hey, Paul. We've got a serious situation unfolding here on Voli Alpha.
That's right, Janessa. Our next story tonight is the mysterious illness that's been spreading through the streets of Neon. It's being called Neon Fever, and it's got everyone on edge.
The symptoms are severe coughing, high fever, psychosis, hydrophobia, and hallucinations. It's already claimed 4 lives.
The authorities have declared a state of emergency and imposed a lockdown in the most affected districts, including the lower levels and the Neon docks. Hospitals are overwhelmed and medical teams from the Freestar Collective are assisting.
Some experts think it might be linked to a contaminated batch of Aurora, the drug derived from the chasm bass fish. Others believe it could be due to the unique environmental conditions of Voli Alpha.
It's a tough situation. The symptoms are not just physically debilitating, but also mentally distressing. Imagine experiencing hydrophobia in a place like Neon, where water is everywhere.
Exactly, Paul. The psychosis is causing chaos. People are experiencing severe paranoia and delusions, leading to violent outbursts and dangerous behavior. There have been reports of individuals attacking others, believing them to be threats, and some have even barricaded themselves in their homes out of fear.
Benjamin Bayou, the CEO of XenoFresh Fisheries and the administrator of Neon, made a statement earlier today. Here's a clip.
I urge everyone to remain calm and follow the guidelines issued by health authorities. Together, we will overcome this challenge.
Strong words from Bayou. Let's hope they can back them up with action. In the meantime, residents are advised to stay indoors, avoid unnecessary travel, and report any symptoms to the nearest medical facility.
It's a challenging time for everyone in Neon. The lockdown is necessary, but it's also causing a lot of stress. People are worried about their jobs, their families, and their health.
And let's not forget the economic impact. Neon is a major hub for trade and tourism. The lockdown is bound to affect businesses, especially those in the lower levels and the Neon docks.
Absolutely. The Freestar Collective's medical teams are doing their best, but the situation is evolving rapidly. We'll keep you updated with the latest developments.
And for our listeners, remember to stay safe. Follow the guidelines, stay indoors, and report any symptoms immediately. We're all in this together.
Stay tuned for more news and stories from around the settled systems.
No matter how far you roam, tranquility brings the comfort of home to you. Brewed with love from our family to yours, tranquility.
You are tuned into the Galactic Pulse. I am Janessa, and we have a very special guest with us, a former member of the controversial Marine unit of the UC that was disbanded after the Colony Wars. Please welcome Dr. Sanjoy Prasad.
Thank you, Janessa. It is a privilege to be here.
Dr. Prasad, the Red Devils have a storied history, particularly during the Colony War. Can you tell us about your role in the unit and some of the challenges you faced?
I served as a xenobiologist with the Red Devils, a special forces unit of the United Colonies military. My primary mission involved the study and weaponization of alien organisms for combat applications, a field referred to as xeno-affair.
Fascinating. I've heard that to enlist in the Red Devils, prospective recruits were required to serve at least one mining tour on Mars before being eligible. Can you tell us more about this requirement?
Yes, that is accurate. The Red Devils implemented a prerequisite whereby candidates were required to complete a mining tour on Mars. This process was designed to filter out less resilient individuals. The extreme conditions and physical demands of Martian mining operations served as an effective preliminary assessment of a recruit's endurance and fortitude.
That sounds incredibly rigorous. Given the demanding nature of the recruitment process, how did these highly trained individuals utilize xenoweapons in their operations?
One notable strategy involved the deployment of xenoweapons via aerial insertion into Freestar collective manufacturing facilities. For instance, genetically modified organisms were introduced into mech production sites to disrupt assembly processes. These organisms exhibited high levels of aggression and resistance to neutralization, thereby maximizing operational disruption. Additionally, we utilized bioengineered insect swarms in logistical sabotage missions. These insects were programmed to target and destroy critical supply catches and equipment, effectively impairing enemy supply chains without direct engagement. Larger Xena weapons such as Greed Stalkers were employed in ambush tactics against enemy patrols in remote locations.
And how did you manage the risks associated with using such unpredictable weapons?
Risk management in Xena warfare required rigorous planning and coordination. Specialized teams were tasked with the control and monitoring of Xena weapons to mitigate the risk of collateral damage. Despite the inherent unpredictability of these organisms, their strategic utility in combat scenarios was deemed to outweigh the associated risks.
There have been persistent rumors that the Red Devils are still operational and thereby rogue, despite being disbanded after the war. What can you tell us about these claims?
The Red Devils were officially disbanded following the conclusion of the Colony War. Remaining personnel were expected to reintegrate into civilian roles or other military units. While I cannot confirm the veracity of rumors regarding rogue operations, it is plausible that the camaraderie and shared experiences of former members have led to continued informal associations. The ethos of the Red Devils persists among those who served.
Your stories are truly gripping, Dr. Prasad. Before we wrap up, is there any message you'd like to share with our listeners?
Indeed, Janessa. Serving in the Red Devils was a significant chapter of my life. We were a unit forged in the crucible of conflict, dedicated to the defense of the United Colonies. Despite the contentious nature of our methods, our commitment to our mission and to each other was unwavering. To the listeners, I urge you to remember the sacrifices made by those who served. The Red Devils may no longer exist as an official entity, but the principles we upheld, innovation, determination, and loyalty, remain relevant. Let us endeavor to create a future where such sacrifices are no longer necessary.
Wise words indeed. Thank you, Dr. Prasad, for sharing your experiences with us. It's been a while since the peace treaty, but the echoes of those battles still resonate. Today, we're taking a detailed look at the Colony War, a conflict that really shook the settled systems. Welcome back, Paul.
Thanks, Janessa. The Colony War was indeed a monumental event, and it's fascinating to revisit those pivotal moments.
Let's dive into the origins of the war. It all started in 2303 when the Freester Collective set up a farming facility on Vesta in the Lunara system. This was viewed by the UC as a breach of the Treaty of Nerion, leading them to deploy their elite Red Devils in 2308 to destroy the facility, which ignited the Colony War.
To understand why this was such a flashpoint, it's important to know what the Treaty of Nerion was all about. The primary goal of the treaty was to prevent the unchecked expansionism that had led to the Nerion War. The UC and the Free Star Collective agreed to restrict their borders to specific star systems, Alpha Centauri, Sol, and Wolf for the UC, and Cheyenne, Volii, and Nerion for the Free Star Collective.
That's right. While the treaty explicitly forbade either power from establishing colonies outside these designated borders, it did allow for the creation of outposts. However, it didn't clearly define what constituted an outpost versus a colony, leading to a lot of ambiguity and maneuvering.
This vagueness sparked a period of Cold War known as the Great Game, where both powers tried to exploit the loopholes in the treaty. They pushed the limits of what was permissible without outright violating the terms. This ongoing brinkmanship eventually set the stage for the outbreak of the Colony War in 2308.
And as we've seen, it wasn't just the legal ambiguities that drove the conflict. The Siege of Vesta in 2308 marked the beginning of hostilities, with the UC's Red Devils and Stalkers taking aggressive action against what they saw as a clear treaty violation.
The Siege of Vesta was one of the first major confrontations. The Red Devils and Stalkers took the Free Star Defenders by surprise, showcasing the United Colonies' military might and their new Xeno weapons early in the conflict.
While the UC and the Free Star Collective were preoccupied with the war, a new threat emerged in the settled systems. Londinion was attacked by swarms of Terramorphs, which led Admiral Francois Sinon to order an orbital bombardment to contain the outbreak. This controversial action resulted in extreme civilian casualties and effectively trapped both the population and the Terramorphs on the planet. you can listen to Jackson Ryder's insightful interview with Dr. Carling, a gentleman adventurer who visited Londinium after the Terramorph attack.
The Battle of Nyera was another crucial engagement. You see, forces supported by the Red Devils held strong defensive positions until the Freestar Militia's 1st Cavalry, led by Major Paxton Hull, managed to break through after suffering heavy losses. Hull's decision to continue fighting even after the ceasefire was declared really highlighted the war's intensity. The 1st managed to achieve their original objectives, but were court-martialed and discharged for insubordination.
One of the bloodiest naval engagements during the war, the Battle of Cassiopeia was fought in the Eta Cassiopeia system, where a dozen UC vessels and hundreds of lives were lost on either side.
And we can't overlook the Battle of Mars. Towards the end of the war, the Freestar Militia's attack, aimed to disrupt UC industrial operations, was successfully repelled by the UC, preventing damage to the city of Sidonia.
Finally, the Battle of Cheyenne in 2311 was a decisive moment. Admiral Sannin's assault on Aquila, the Freestar Collective's capital, ended in failure. Despite his aggressive tactics, including targeting civilian ships, the UC Navy had to retreat, leading to the eventual peace treaty.
Speaking of tactics, let's talk about mechs. Both sides used them, but the Freestar Collective's mechs had a distinct advantage.
That's right. The Freestar Collective's advancements in mech technology were largely due to their reliance on mechs in remote locations. Their decentralized population often lived in isolated areas where mechs were essential not only for farming and mining, but also for protecting against dangerous wildlife and other hazards.
Exactly. This constant use of mechs in practical everyday situations meant that Freestar developers focused heavily on making their mechs versatile in advance. The need for these machines to be effective in a variety of roles contributed to their superior design.
Additionally, the Freestar Collective's mech pilots were often civilian farmers and workers who were already familiar with operating mechs. This meant they didn't need extensive training, as they were already adept at handling these machines from their daily activities.
On the other hand, while the USA also deployed mechs, they didn't have the same level of technological advancement or practical experience. Their mechs, though powerful, lagged behind in terms of versatility and effectiveness compared to their Freestar counterparts. However, the USA had their own edge with special units like the Red Devils, who were equipped with Xeno weapons and had the best xenobiologists in the settled systems.
That's right. And speaking of the Red Devils, we had a fascinating interview with Dr. Persat, who was a xenobiologist with the Red Devils during the war. His insights into the use of xenoweapons and their impact on the battlefield were eye-opening.
Dr. Persat provided some incredible details on how the Red Devils used their expertise and technology in the field.
The Red Devils and their advanced xenoweapons certainly added a unique dimension to the conflict. Their capabilities combined with the cutting-edge technology and biological expertise were formidable. This made the UC's approach to warfare distinct and often quite daunting for the Freestar Collective.
Speaking of the armistice, it was a significant and comprehensive agreement. Both sides were determined not to repeat the mistakes of the Colony War. The horrors of modern warfare were too much to bear. To prevent such devastation from happening again, the armistice included several key provisions.
The treaty imposed strict limits on fleet sizes and completely outlawed both xenowarfare and the use of mechs. All data and technology related to these areas were sealed away in an archive under New Atlantis, which remains inaccessible without unanimous consent from the UC, the Freestar Collective, and House Faerun.
Furthermore, special units like the Red Devils were dissolved, and many of the labs and factories that developed xeno weapons and advanced mech technology were shut down. This was a clear effort to ensure that the tools of such destructive warfare would not be used again.
Three senior UC officers, Commander Henry Durant, General Indira Rastogi, and Fleet Admiral Francois Sinan, were publicly charged and convicted of war crimes due to their conduct during the war. They were sentenced to death.
The war's aftermath had lasting effects on the settled systems. Many military facilities were left abandoned, leading to a rise in crime. Pirates, spacers, and freshly unemployed mercenaries repurposed these facilities, creating new challenges for law enforcement and security.
On the bright side, there has been a hopeful sense of optimism, collaboration, and peace in the United Colonies and the Freestar Collective since the war. Thanks for joining us on the Galactic Pulse.
Next, we have a very special guest who brings a touch of humor and grit straight from the bustling spaceship manufacturing hub of Hopetown. Let's give a warm welcome to the hilarious Zeta Williams. Zeta, it's fantastic to have you here.
Howdy, Paul. Mighty fine to be here. I reckon y'all are in for a real treat. I'm ready to sprinkle a bit of Hopetown humor into this here broadcast. All right, here is a classic with a twist. Why did the astronaut break up with his girlfriend? Because he needed space. And in Hopetown, we get it. Space is precious, especially when you're crammed in with parts and paperwork.
That's a great start. Got any more jokes to hit close to home for those working at Hope Tech?
You bet. How about this one? Why did the Scarecrow become a successful engineer? Because he was outstanding in his field. And believe me, at Hope Tech, we all standy, even if it means standing in a pile of parts all day.
That's fantastic. And what about a joke that really reflects the day-to-day grind at a spaceship manufacturer?
Absolutely. Hopetown's a place where they make the real workhorses of the galaxy. Hope Tech builds spaceships that get the job done without all the fancy frills. If your ship's in need of parts that are more about function than flash, we're your go-to. Our motto? If it ain't broke, we can still make it better. Here's a gem for ya. Why don't programmers like nature? It has too many bugs. At Hope Tech, we joke that if you see a bug in the system, it's probably just a new feature. We didn't plan for it.
That's a good one too. Hit us one more before you go.
You know I got you covered. Why did the engineer refuse to pay cards? Because he didn't want to deal with the deck. And at Hope Tech, dealing with the deck of parts is just part of the daily grind.
That's perfect, Zeta. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your unique brand of humor with our listeners.
Anytime, Paul. It's been a hoot. And I hope folks enjoyed a slice of Hope Town.
Thanks for tuning in. This is the Galactic Pulse.
Whether you're pulling a double shift in neon or cruising the stars with your crew, there's one way to keep your edge. Boom Pop. Available now at kiosks across Neon, Cydonia, and beyond.
Guidance.